9 minutes after the hour. Good morning, Tom and Laura, Vice Provost of International Affairs, Texas Tech University, Ambassador Tibor Nagy Jr. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
You know, we had some interesting perspective off mic here just about John Kerry on Meet the Press yesterday.
Oh, my gosh, the poor guy. I actually felt sorry for him trying to defend the Obama administration's foreign policy. Well, you know, he talked about engagement. He said, yeah, we're active here, we're active there, we're active everywhere. But then right behind him comes Senator Lindsey Graham, who talks about results. Yes, but 180,000 Syrians have died. Yes, the Islamic Caliphate owns a large swath of the Middle East. Yes, Putin's getting away with everything. You know, he swallows Crimea, and now his folks are shooting down airliners, and there are no sanctions. And this administration is not my favorite foreign policy administration, but I actually felt sorry for Kerry. Because it was
trying
just pitiful.
To defend it.
Yeah, trying to defend it.
Wow.
Well, haven't had really great foreign policy in a long, long time, actually, because Bush wasn't anybody's friend around the world either.
No, he was not anybody's friend, and he had two very good secretaries of state, but it was an extremely difficult hand that they were dealt.
Yeah, it's just tough.
It has been a long time. I mean, you know, Colin Powell, very honorable man. Mm-hmm. Condoleezza Rice, extremely knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. But what a situation they had to deal
with. Is the presidency of the United States, is that just becoming more of a position that people just don't really care around the world? Who's in office or what
happens?
Well,
actually, I think people do care a great deal about who's in office, whether that office is effective or ineffective, because it has huge ramifications. And, you know, this is a perfect example of having a guy who is very cerebral, I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter too kind of thing, thinks about everything. But by lack of focus, lack of action, lack of a statement, lack of leadership, it leaves a huge vacuum around the world. Mm. And when there's a vacuum around the world, someone's going to fill it up, whether it's terrorists, whether it's Vladimir Putin, whether it's the Chinese in the East China Sea, whether it's the Islamic Caliphate in the Middle East. Somebody is going to fill it up.
Let's talk about Mr. Putin.
Yeah,
we've not heard a lot from him over this whole airliner being shot down.
He's kind of keeping his head down in the moment, isn't he?
Well, you remember, at the end of the day, think of him as a KGB colonel, not as Russia's president. And he's always going to act like a KGB colonel, which means obfuscate, lie, accuse your opponents of doing exactly what you're doing or you want to do, never admit any wrong. Right now, you know, and of course, the best defense is always going on offense. Right now, I think he's examining what cards he has to play. And I think he's really considering what he wants to do, because this plane tragedy gives him a chance, if he wants it, to dramatically change direction, to say, okay, enough is enough. I've caused enough mischief in eastern Ukraine. What I can do now is leverage my influence and come out of this looking like a hero, telling the Ukrainians and the rebels, okay, you know, enough is enough. Why don't you guys really get together, come out with a negotiated settlement, a decentralized Ukraine. I will support you. Make sure that there's peace in the area. And then he's going to be the hero. Just remember, he was the hero after Obama's famous red line in the sand in Syria, and the Syrians used chemical weapons. And Obama, and they were doing backward flips trying to avoid doing anything. And then Putin saved Obama from having to take action. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, Putin looked like the good guy, incredibly enough.
Wow. So does he just start these fights just so he can come along and decide to be the hero?
No, he's got a strategy. I mean, his strategy is put the influence of Russia back to the influence that the Soviet Union had. He wants to reassemble the old Soviet Union, not necessarily geographically, but definitely when it comes to influence and power. And Act Two is to be a nuisance to the United States wherever and whenever he can do it.
Well, he's certainly successful in that. So this is really a defining moment in his career
this. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think we're not hearing very much from him. He's being very, very deliberate. I'm sure he's talking to his folks. He may be waiting to see what wimpy move the Europeans are going to do, which I have no confidence that they will do anything, including the Dutch government. And the Dutch government should be the one that'd be pounding the table.
Right. Most of those people on board were
Oh, absolutely.
Aren't you know, isn't his attitude towards the United States really that we aren't going to do anything? I mean, we aren't going to do anything.
I think the most defining moment of the Obama presidency overseas was his red line in the sand in Syria. Afterwards, when he failed to do anything, I think that sent a message to every friend and every enemy of the United States, is that at the end of the day, the United States president is a bluffer.
But really, what can we do in this situation about this airliner that was shot down?
Well, we could do something extremely significant if we wanted to and really kick the Russians, would be to say we're not going to allow any Russian airline company to land in the United States. And any Western airline company that lands in Russia will not be able to come to the United States.
One day, devastate
Russian civil aviation. One day, send them a message that they would never forget. Because for every airline company in the world, their transatlantic market is the most valuable. Even the Chinese, even they would think about it.
Really? It's interesting. But that's not going to happen, is it?
I doubt it. We just don't have that kind of a nerve anymore. You know, where's Ronald Reagan when we need him?
What's this wee stuff?
What would be the bad? What would be the downside of doing that? I mean, why wouldn't?
Well, the airline companies would scream bloody murder. Some of them, and the Europeans would certainly scream bloody murder and extraterritoriality. But at the end of the day, it would have its effect.
It would send a message.
Oh my
definitely.
Gosh, it would. But that's not how we act anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get it. 7:15. We'll be back. Okay, check it out. What do you think the relative humidity would be?
This morning it felt like it was like 70%.
It's like 81%.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt a little humid.
That's why you feel like you're in a perpetual state of perspiration.
Yeah.
All right, we're having a conversation with Ambassador Tibor Nagy Jr., Vice Provost of International Affairs at Texas Tech University. Now, I just got to pose the question because my wife asked this. We were traveling in the car this weekend. What does a vice provost of international affairs do?
Well, it's a great job. I oversee all of the international students who come to Texas Tech, and we are very much want to double the number. Then we also send out about 1,000 Texas Tech students to various destinations around the world.
Study abroad kind of a
study
thing.
Abroad, okay. Types of programs. Then we're also responsible for all the international exchange agreements between institutions around the world and Texas Tech University. And we have like 150 of those, and we're expanding those all the time. So it's a great place to be because, you know, for President Nellis, global engagement is one of his very, very top issues. Mm-hmm. He wants to make Texas Tech a globally renowned institution. So it's kind of neat. You know, U.S. universities remain the best in the world, the good ones, and everybody from around the world wants to come to the United States. And we certainly want to get our share of the best students from around the world.
Right, which is part of the immigration issue, is making sure
that we can have a way to get those good students. Yeah, with the students, it's much more, it's interesting, it's more of an export issue, because very few people think of our education, higher ed, as an export, but it's like the fourth or fifth biggest export in the country. Because international students come here, and by buying a U.S. education, they're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars in the United States. And in addition to buying education, they buy cars and apartments and furniture and, you know, hamburgers and everything that goes with it.
Right. Let's go to the Middle East and the Gaza Strip. Of course, you know, pretty much everything's breaking loose.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was interesting to me.
Two Americans, by the way, were killed over the weekend there.
Yeah, they're dual citizenship, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One from South Padre Island.
Interesting. Yeah, that's right. There was a Texas dual Israeli citizen, just like there was a dual citizen killed on the airliner, too.
Right.
American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Egypt suggested the ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hamas folks didn't oblige, and so Israel just goes ahead and moves into the Strip, and their
goal, in a limited way.
Right, but their goal was to shut down some of these tunnels.
Right.
And we were talking the other day about this. These are not like these itty-bitty tunnels where you know, people crouch down and they're crawling through. These are tunnels that are big enough to drive an 18-wheeler in.
Yes, some of them are huge, especially the ones between Egypt and the Gaza Strip were really, really huge. But then the current Egyptian government, the military government, has shut most of those down. So now the Israelis would really like to shut down as many of the other tunnels as possible. The problem is, you know, we were talking before, the Gaza Strip is not a nice, neat, organized area into city blocks where you say, okay, can I check in your basement to make sure you don't have a tunnel? There are a couple of urban areas splattered out there. It's an area about twice as big as the District of Columbia. Think of Washington, D.C., you know, 10 by 10. And the Gaza Strip's about twice as big, but much of it is rural and very, very rugged. That's why some of the folks who've been killed have been Bedouins. So think Nevada. You know, some of the countryside around Nevada where you have outcroppings, you have sand dunes, you have some rocks. And it's not easy to just walk and say, oh, that's a place for a tunnel, that's a place for a tunnel. These things can be extremely, extremely well hidden. So Israel's objective is to go in a limited way, and I want to underline limited, and take out as many of the tunnels as they can. But it's almost impossible for them to get 100% of the tunnels. You know?
Wow.
So we'll see. But I think both sides now really want to find a very elegant way to back out of this so that both of them can claim some semblance of victory. I think for Hamas, it's a lot more important to claim victory than really for the Israelis, because the Israelis can define victory as, you know, we destroyed X number of tunnels. But for Hamas, it's going to be very difficult because their goal is they really need to have a border opening. They somehow have to get out of this with having a formally open border somewhere, whether with Egypt or with Israel. So we'll see how they'll get to that point.
Probably more success getting that done through Egypt than
Israel?
Yeah,
except here's their problem, because this Egyptian government, I think, dislikes them even more than the Israelis dislike them.
Really?
Yeah, because the current Egyptian government looks at Hamas as an offshoot of their own Muslim Brotherhood. It's the Palestinian version of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Egyptian generals don't like them one bit.
Kind of like the Crips and the Bloods.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly, right. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, this week obviously is going to play out because, you know, yesterday was devastating for Israel. 13 Israeli soldiers killed. It doesn't sound like an egregiously high number, but for Israel, it's very, very tough.
Did Hamas take an Israeli soldier captive? Israel was denying
that
claim.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know because, you know, in the heat of battle, things can happen, and who knows. But Israel is denying that. The last report I saw, but very possible.
It's a mess over there. It's always a mess. It was funny on CNN yesterday. They showed, it wasn't on CNN. It was on one of the comedy news shows.
Oh, yeah.
And they showed Anderson Cooper reporting about the situation in the Gaza Strip, and then they showed him several years ago, and then years ago
saying
before
the same
that,
thing.
Saying the same thing.
Absolutely. It does not change, because at this point, neither side really wants the situation to be different.
Right.
As sad as it is to say that the status quo is the least evil for all of them.
It's so sad for the people who live there.
It is. It's for both sides.
And the children.
For both sides. But I think one of the most significant things, Netanyahu said that Israel uses its missiles to protect its people, and the Palestinians use their people to protect their missiles.
Right.
At least Hamas does. And to
me,
that
says
it all.
They hide behind women and the children.
Well, and they don't want it to go away, because if there wasn't a red-headed stepchild, who are they going to beat, right?
That's very sad. Exactly.
Crazy. Yeah. Hey, Ambassador Tibor Nash Jr., thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure. You guys have a great day.
Thanks for the perspective. It's 7:28. Good morning, Tom and Laura. We've got the winners of the CASAS for CASA coming in after 8 this morning.